discourse on We the People, But Who Are We? By Gary Hunt, Outpost of Freedom, Episode 6, Part 5. In Part 1, we established that the Supreme Court determined who we the people, or citizens of the United States, were prior to the ratification of the 14th Amendment. In Part 2, we saw that the 14th Amendment conferred to those not of we the people, regardless of prior status, a new class of people who were granted privileges and immunities, though not the rights inherent with we the people. In Part 3, we see that within a few years of ratification of the 14th Amendment, the Supreme Court confirms that rights were not conveyed by that amendment. In Part 4, we find that the Supreme Court did recognize that there was a difference between a citizen of a state and a citizen of the United States, and that the latter was protected, jurisdiction existed, by the 14th Amendment, and to the former, it did not. There was no jurisdiction. Now we will move forward 56 years to 1964 to a case that reaffirms the classes of citizen, though it begins to erode the protection previously provided to citizens of the United States. The case is Molloy versus Hogan at 378 U.S. 1. It's 378 U.S. 1 and involves the discussion of the court of just which amendment of the Bill of Rights are extended to those who seek protection under the 14th Amendment when it says, it was on the authority of that decision that the court said in 1908 in Twining v. New Jersey, Supra, that it is possible that some of the personal rights safeguarded by the first 8 amendments against national action may also be safeguarded against state action because a denial of them would be a denial of due process. So the question that arose in this case is, to what extent does the 14th Amendment apply to the protection of rights and which rights are protected? It redefines what is said in Twining and requires that any right being protected be a denial of the due process law. This is a simple paraphrase of the equal protection of the law from the 14th Amendment. So it simply expands that singular authority to include speech, press, and other rights within the first 8 amendments, so long as due process can be brought into the equation. It did not, however, begin to address anything that would remove or affect the nature of the two classes of citizen. They remain unimpaired and intact. Since the courts will use a stepping stone process in revising laws to a more modern interpretation, Molloy afforded the court the opportunity to undermine the distinction between the two classes. However, they chose not to walk upon that sacred ground. Their absence of comment on the two classes leaves that distinction intact. So we can see that from Dred Scott in Part 1, in 1854, the court established a foundation of this country as being built upon, by, and for a certain class of people. This is probably best defined by the wording of Justice Taney in that decision, to wit, it is true, every person in every class and description of persons who were at the time of the adoption of the Constitution recognized as citizens in the several states became also a citizen of the new political body, but none other. It was formed by them and for them and their posterity, but for no one else. And privileges guaranteed to citizens of this new sovereignty were intended to embrace those only who were then members of the several state communities, or who should afterwards, by birthright or otherwise, become members according to the provisions of the Constitution and the principles upon which it was founded. It was the union of those who were at the time members of distinct and separate political communities into one political family whose power for certain specific purposes was extended over the whole territory of the United States, and it gave to each citizen rights and privileges outside of his state which he did not before possess, and placed him in every other state upon a perfect equality with its own citizens as to rights of persons and rights of property, and it made him a citizen of the United States. For the sake of discussion, this sacred class within the United States shall be referred to as we the people. but perhaps we should endeavor with a bit more precision to define just what or who those we the people were and are in light of what Justice Taney said. After much thought, I can only come up with three possibilities that might shed light on Taney's description of what that class known as we the people is. One, that it would include only those who are defined by the rather common acronym WASP, meaning White Anglo-Saxon Protestant. When we consider that in the 17th and 18th century, Jews were not allowed to reside in some of the colonies, that loathing of Catholics or Popists was common through most of the colonies during that period, more effectually demonstrated by the objection of the Quebec Act of 1774, allowing Catholics to vote and hold office in Canada, are indicative of the sympathies of that time. Two, Caucasians of European descent, which would include perhaps 99% of those who had immigrated to the colonies to begin life anew, or three, those of Indo-European language groups, first defined in 1647 and including English, Dutch, Greek, Latin, Persian, Germanic, Slavic, Celtic, and Baltic languages, thus having a common heritage and culture, at least in the distant past. There is no way that we can interpret exactly from what Justice Taney said just who we the people were, though it is clear by the context of his description that it would include those above described peoples or combinations thereof, but for no one else. Then the 14th Amendment was ratified and granted citizenship to people who were not of this class, we the people. Further, it granted them only privileges and immunities. It did not grant them rights. This position, distinction between classes, is further supported by the ratification of the 15th Amendment, granting the right of suffrage, voting, regardless of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. Then in 1874, the court in Happersett, in Part 4, made clear that the 14th Amendment did not convey rights. However, the Constitution makes clear that there are rights retained by the people, we the people. So since there cannot be a conflict between the Constitution and an amendment, unless expressly resolved in the amendment, the distinction is further enhanced. So, for all intents and purposes, there are four classes of people in this country today. First, we the people, those descended from the framers or otherwise within the principles of the original Constitution who have retained their rights. Second, those made citizens by the 14th Amendment with the privileges and immunities granted therein and any rights specifically bestowed by subsequent amendments. Third, those who are here lawfully and in accordance with all laws as visitors and who have not violated any conditions of the permission granted to visit. And fourth, those who are here unlawfully that have entered in violation of our laws or have violated the conditions of their permissive visitation. The foundation of this country then rests upon an understanding what the purpose of the Constitution and the country is to provide a home for of those of the class we the people, that others who choose to assimilate into the American culture do so with the understanding and the understanding that they are the beneficiaries of all privileges and immunities, though only those rights specifically granted. It can also be concluded that any who have designs contrary to the support and continuation of the United States as intended by the framers and described herein are inconsistent with the purpose of the country and as such are against the Constitution and should be deemed unacceptable and unwanted visitors. If the United States is to return to its former stature as the beacon of the world, of free enterprise by a free people, we must return also to the concept that allowed such concepts of freedom to prosper and grow in a rather short history, to what it had become by the end of the 19th century. It can return to that stature only if we do return to those principles that made this nation great. Absent a dedication to that purpose, we are destined to be nothing more than a footnote in history, and that will be our rightful place if we fail to act to secure that which we hold so dear. Thus concludes this series.